my question to you is, what is your line of action if CISI verdict comes in PTI's favor and the government says we don't follow it or whatever they come up with? Because they are clearly trying to avoid it. What do you do? You must have thought something in your mind.
Look, when I dissolved my two assemblies, we got the top lawyers, we looked at the constitution. Every lawyer in Pakistan has said that the moment you dissolve your assemblies, no government elections have to be held within 90 days. I mean, this is unambiguous. There is just no doubt about this thing. So the moment you get out of 90 days, you are in violation of the constitution. And it is one of those violations where once you get out of 90 days, who decides when? So if the government says in October, well, why not in December? Why not next year? So the moment General Zia got out of the 90 days when he came into power and he said, I will hold elections in 90 days, the moment he got away, he lasted for 11 years.
So if the government
does not accept the Supreme Court verdict, means it is now violating the Constitution, then the Supreme Court could slap contempt on the government. And let me assure everyone that the entire people of Pakistan will be standing with the Supreme Court.
And what does PTI plan on doing? Are you planning on going back on roads? What's the line of action?
No, I think it just won't be PTI. You will have the lawyers community, all the legal community will be standing on one side, because there is just no way you can. The Constitution leaves no doubt that the elections have to be held in 90 days. So therefore, it will be very difficult to defend anyone who then thinks that the elections can be delayed, just because the government is petrified of losing the elections, because all opinion polls show that they are going to be decimated. Therefore, they just are running scared of the election, and they are willing to even violate the Constitution.
And this is very nicely leans into the next question that I have. You have been demanding elections since the moment you left the government. You were basically ousted. And all the by polls you have swept, you have gone like 7-6-0 in your own election. And you have expressed multiple times that you are looking to sweep the elections. 2/3 majority is what you're looking for. And you have also said in your previous interviews last year that we will not accept the result if we don't get that. So my question to you specifically would be, will you accept this election result if you don't get outright the majority and, you know, will you force to make coalition government? Are you confident of free and fair elections?
I have never said that I will not accept the election results if we don't get 2/3 majority. All I have said is that right now, if you look at the opinion polls, you look at the by-elections, where despite total support by the establishment and the election commission, the 12-party coalition has only won 7 out of 37. PTI has won 30 by-elections. So it reflects that the PTI is going to sweep the elections, and hence the government scared of elections and running away. But I can't say what the elections would be, you know, whether I will accept the results or not, because we don't know what the election commission is totally controlled by the government, as is obvious in the Supreme Court. The election commissioner had no constitutional right to prolong the elections. They could not have announced the election in October. This is a violation of the constitution. In fact, the election commission should be held in contempt because the constitution is clear. Their job was to hold the elections when as required in the constitution. They couldn't have given a date in October. So my point is that we will see what happens in the elections. I can't say whether we'll accept the result or not, because I don't know what will happen in the elections and how the election commission and the establishment will behave. I don't know.
Going forward, and you obviously in the last 12 months, you have been talking about military's role. Have you planned in restructuring civil-military imbalance that we are seeing? How do you plan on working on that?
Look, Pakistan has to change. Where we are stuck right now, Pakistan is stuck in the worst economic crisis in our history. Now, if we have to get out of this crisis, Pakistan has to completely be restructured. Our governance system has to change completely. We have to have rule of law in this country to create the enabling environment to attract investment in this country, because we have hardly any investment coming in. Our biggest source of investment are overseas Pakistanis. There are about 10 million overseas Pakistanis. Their GDP is more than, in dollars, is more than the GDP of Pakistan. The 16,000 US American physicians, Pakistani American physicians, their net worth is $200 billion. The 10 rich Pakistani businessmen in US have net worth is $25 billion. Just the money sent out from Pakistan, from Pakistanis to Dubai, where they have brought property in Dubai, 20,000 Pakistanis have property worth $10.4 billion in Dubai. So now, number one, why is money going out of Pakistan? You know, dollars going out. Number two, how can we attract the huge 10 million Pakistanis with dollar deposits, dollar earnings? How can we attract their investment into Pakistan? That is the two issues. And that can only happen if we fix our governance system.
But I'm specifically asking about a civil-military imbalance that has, you know, caused so much grief in the last 1 year, as you clearly mentioned in the first answer. Specifically, keeping to civil-military imbalance, how do you look at that?
Look, the civil-military imbalance cannot work if you want to improve Pakistan. I mean, the current civil and military imbalance has to change if you want to Pakistan to get out of this mess. And by that, I mean rule of law. You cannot have a system where the prime minister has the responsibility, but he does not have the authority to implement his policies because that authority is shared with the military. There's no doubt that there's a role of, you cannot wish away the role of military in Pakistan because it's entrenched for 70 years, but you need that balance. If you do not have that balance, you cannot have that governance system. That governance system is needed now for Pakistan's survival. You can only attract investment in Pakistan if you have rule of law in the country. Out of the 140 countries in the world, Pakistan's rule of law index is 129. So if you don't have rule of law, you can't attract investment. Without investment, Pakistan is stuck in this debt trap. We are stuck. We're just taking loans to pay back loans.
It's almost like a domino effect, like everything is collapsing.
Point is, the way we stand today, unless we completely reform our governance system and base it on rule of law, I don't think, you know, any economic, you can come up with the best economist, but in this environment, no economic policy is going to work.
Right. So going on from there, in the March 25th on your address in the Lahore, which you had like such a massive crowd, you talked about reforming the country as you presented this 10-point economic agenda. Could you be more specific about those reform agendas and what would you have done differently if you were still in power right now, like in the last 12 months?
The only thing different would have been to impose rule of law. Look, I have seen countries, I mean, I have spent a lot of time in England as a professional cricketer, and then I went to university before. So the big difference in countries that are prosperous and the ones that have high levels of poverty is only one, rule of law.
But that's isn't a very generic, very broad level thing, which is why I'm specifically asking in terms of immediate concern that we have, like, for instance, economy.
Look,
how would you look at it?
Economy is completely connected with rule of law, which then establishes, gives the enabling environment for investment. Pakistan is very fortunate that it has, which I started in the beginning, 10 million overseas Pakistanis earning in dollars. It's very fortunate. Now, at the moment, all we rely on are remittances from overseas Pakistanis. We cannot attract their investment. Why can't we attract their investment? Because they do not have confidence in our judicial system and the rule of law here. So once, if they don't have confidence, they will go and invest in Dubai, in Malaysia, anywhere else, but not here. And this is our biggest handicap, because what is the problem of Pakistan? It's our current account deficit. Our problem is that we have more dollars going out than coming in. Now, the question is, how can we attract dollars in Pakistan? The number one way, of course, is exports. But if we start from, say, if we have power from day one, it's going to take time before we get the industry going, we get sort of all the country geared towards export.
We are at a midst of quite a, upheaval in our region going on right now. We also have to balance between China. Often we have been people say we are a Chinese colony. Then we have America on one side. Then we have hostile neighbor on the eastern front. We have security concerns on the western front. Specifically speaking on these foreign policy issues, very immediate ones, how do you see that? How do you plan on working towards them, considering we have had the whole conspiracy, thing had been going on?
Look, foreign policy, number one, has to be for the benefit of your own population. Every nation makes its foreign policy for the interest of its people. So that's the beginning. Now, what is in the interest of Pakistani people to have a foreign policy where we get out of any conflicts like Afghan jihad, like war on terror? I mean, these conflicts cost us a lot. We suffered, especially the war on terror. 80,000 Pakistanis died. We had billions, over 100 billion lost to the economy because, who wants to invest in a country which is considered the most dangerous in the world? There are terrorist attacks going on. So we learned one thing, that we do not want to get involved in other people's conflict, number one. And then why should we exclude ourselves like in the Cold War? We became part of the US bloc. But that meant that Russia and Central Asian countries, which would be great trading partners for Pakistan, even Afghanistan, all that became in the other sphere and out of our reach of trade. So why not have a foreign policy like India? India has a very mature foreign policy. It is trading with the US. It is trading with China. It is getting cheap oil from Russia. So India's foreign policy benefits its people. It's kept down its inflation because it got oil from Russia at discounted price. We, on the other hand, we had negotiated discounted price, but our government went. And the new government came in and they just didn't pay any attention to it. As a result, we had to pay high oil prices, which led to high inflation and which led to poor poverty.